Hour number two, it's Extra 1360. With you from the iHeart Studios here on a Wednesday. U.S. Open underway tomorrow morning at 6:45 a.m. Let's say hello to Nota Begay III. He's with the Golf Channel. He's here today courtesy of Bet Online. You can check out Bet Online for the most recent odds to win the U.S. Open. They've got all sorts of fun props as well. Golf is a great prop sport. It really might be the best prop sport, like what the winning score will be, what the cut line's going to be, what the length of the winner's final putt will be, head-to-head golfer matchups, which is always super entertaining and exciting. It's sort of what's happening on the course anyway. I mean, I don't know that Nota Begay III is going to talk to us about that, but these guys oftentimes will have a little bit of side action going on as well. Your favorite to win the 2021 U.S. Open, the 121st U.S. Open, which is underway tomorrow right here at Torrey Pines. John Rahm, 10-1. Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson at 16-1. Bryson DeChambeau, a U.S. Open winner, is tied with Xander Schauffele. Our guy Xander Schauffele at 18-1. Let's say hello to Nota Begay III, who joins us on Extra 1360. Nota, Darren Smith, welcome back. Thank you for the time.
Well, thanks, Darren, and I agree. I think golf is the most intriguing and interesting sport to bet on with regard to all the props. I mean, there's even a prop out there at Bet Online that asks you whether or not the flagstick is going to be in on the winning putt. So, you know, it's up to you. Do you think somebody's going to chip in from off the green to win the tournament, or they get a 2-foot captain where they ask their caddy to take the pin out? So, a lot of intriguing little opportunities to sort of keep your interest peaked as you watch the golf tournament.
Well, Nota, take us out there on the course itself. I mentioned there's usually a little bit of side action going on. I don't know about a U.S. Open, but I wouldn't rule it out either. I mean, golfers always seem to have a little action going, right? Stroke to stroke, hole to hole.
Well, it's the nature of the beast from the time we grow up is, whether you're playing for a soda, whether you're playing for lunch, whether you're playing $100 one down, there's always seems to be a little action here or there. Technically betting is against the rules on the PGA Tour, but, maybe from time to time, these guys do have a little side action. I'll tell you a story. I was sitting in the clubhouse one day with Mike Weir and Jim Furyk watching a tournament come down the stretch, and somebody had a chip from the bunker, and Weirzy shouted out saying, "Hey, look, I got a couple hundred that he's going to chip this in." And one of the other players says, "Okay, I'll take that action." And it might have even been Tiger, because I knew it was up at Bridgestone, but Tiger ended up chipping it in, surprisingly. And Weirzy ended up taking home a few extra bucks on the plane ride home. We did, in fact, get in trouble for that, just so everybody knows. Word got out that we had a little side action. But we have since progressed here at the PGA Tour, and now betting is a part of our platform, and hence we're on this call and looking at taking some considerations around John Rahm, who's coming in at 10-1, but my pick right now for the week is Roy McIlroy, who's right at 20-1. I think that's a good number for him.
All right, 20-1, too. That's good value as well. I mentioned Xander Schauffele, and obviously, Nota, I'm being a little bit of a homer here because he's a local guy, a guy that we've gotten to know over the years as well. But it's not like I'm completely just pulling this name. He's performed very, very well in U.S. Opens. It feels like he's knocking on the door of a major championship. And at 18-1, that's one that's got me raising my eyebrows a little bit.
Yeah, and that's a very solid pick. And one thing that sort of, I think, adds even more intrigue and more value to Xander Schauffele is that Torrey Pines, in the last full season before COVID, was the fifth toughest golf course to make a putt inside of 10 feet. And obviously the slope, the speed, and the Poana surfaces make it tough to make putts inside 10 feet. Riviera, Pebble Beach, also Poana were ranked higher. But Xander this year is fifth at the ability to make a putt inside 10 feet. So he's a great putter. He's from the area. He's comfortable on Poana greens, and he's stroking it great, which I think is going to be critical this week in sort of making some key par saves at critical times in your round.
Nota Begay III is an analyst with the Golf Channel. He joins us on Extra 1360. He's here today courtesy of Bet Online. Nota, showing up at a U.S. Open, you've played in a handful of them. You're around the sport all the time. You're dialed in. You know the golfers really well, as good an analyst as there is out there. What is the mindset showing up at a U.S. Open, whether it's Torrey Pines, Pebble Beach, any place else on planet Earth, knowing the way the USGA is, knowing what their preferences are, knowing what their history is. What is the mindset if you're going to show up and you're going to be a serious contender at the U.S. Open? Like, what do you got to clear mentally here before you tee off?
Well, the mindset for players that I know that have done well in these events and have actually won them is survive and stay patient. So bogeys are going to happen. It's just a part of, you know, that's the cover charge to play a U.S. Open is you're going to make bogeys, but don't panic. And, you know, players that do not panic and stay patient and just understand it's about surviving. Again, it's about making that critical 10-footer for par to avoid dropping two shots on a hole. And you're going to see that this week. The players that are able to sort of just not hemorrhage as many bogeys as the rest of the field are the ones that are going to move up the leaderboard. At U.S. Opens, you don't always have to move up the leaderboard by making birdies. You can move up the leaderboard by just making pars.
The value of a par, right? That's something I've heard Phil Mickelson say over the years, countless other golfers as well. Don't underestimate the value of a par. You don't always have to go out there and be a hero. And especially, Nota, you know, we remember this is another one of the props about what the final score would be. 279.5 seems a little low, but we remember last time through back in 2008, Tiger and Rocco Mediate, they were the only golfers who finished under par, both at one under par too. So, you know, this is one of those courses and one of the setups and certainly one of the tournaments that doesn't exactly lend itself here to a bunch of low scores.
Well, anybody listening, then, and this is a public course, so a lot of listeners have the opportunity to come out here and play if you just, you know, sign up and are lucky enough to get a tee time. They know how big of a course. This is a big park. Mm. It is a big park. And then when they convert the sixth hole from a par five to a par four, and now it becomes a 600-yard par four, it becomes an even bigger park. So it's no surprise that last time the scores weren't very low and Tiger Woods was able to win in miraculous fashion. And I think we're going to see similar type of scoring, especially with two rough heights. There's a primary cut at 3 inches and there's a secondary cut at 5 inches. So there's going to need to be a little bit of luck if you're going to sort of approach it like a Bryson DeChambeau who's just going to come out here and try and beat this place to death like he did Wingfoot. And I think that's a decent strategy this week for him. So, you know, at 18-1, you know, that to me is a sensible play. You know, my best pick for the week in terms of sleepers go is, you know, I've got Siwoo Kim in the winner slot to top 10 and to top 20. It's some pretty good value at 150-1 to win. So, that's kind of where I'm looking.
Nota Begay the third is joining us on Extra 1360. How much would experience on this golf course specifically matter? We talk all the time about Tiger's, his experience here as a amateur player. You know, he often talked about it. There's a reason why he wants a bunch of Buicks and then Farmers Insurance Opens and then the U.S. Open as well. I don't know if you in your day at Stanford, if you guys would make the trip down here or from Albuquerque or Nota, whatever the deal is. But how much would experience on this golf course itself, this specific course, for reasons you've already mentioned here, matter to you?
Experience will go a long way here, especially with the subtleties in the surfaces. But most importantly, and which is why I had Siwoo Kim up on my tote board, is because players that have an ability to putt well on Poana greens, the top five most difficult greens to make a putt inside 10 feet in the last full season before COVID, were all Poana greens, and 4 out of 5 were on the West Coast. So they're hard because anybody that's ever played out here and you hit a good putt from 6 feet, it hits a little patch of Poana, kicks it offline, and it lips out, and you're just being like, wow, I can't hit a putt better than that, and it still didn't go in. You have to have a certain mental strength to endure that kind of stuff and just kind of go tap it in, go to the next hole, and realize, hey, it wasn't my stroke. It was just kind of, that's just how it goes out here. And I think that's what Tiger was so good at. And with such perfect conditions being presented week over week to the players, sometimes it's difficult for many of these guys to mentally deal with missing a putt that they should have made.
Nota, when does this part of the game, you know, as a professional, when does, like, we'll just ask you, like, your experience as a professional golfer. When do you start paying attention to, like, Poana grass, you know, and Kukui, like, when do you get introduced to that? Because for most of us weekend hackers, and we just show up and, you know, we're not analyzing the grass. We don't really know the difference from one golf course to the other. What plays well on the ocean might play well in East County. It might play well up in North County and any place else we might travel internationally. As a professional golfer, when does this stuff start becoming important?
Well, I think it starts, you know, at certain levels in the junior golf. And just out of coincidence, you know, I'm hosting one of my national junior golf qualifiers right up the road at Native Oaks later this summer. And what I'm seeing in being more immersed in this junior golf initiative that I'm a part of is that I think when a junior golfer or any golfer gets to a point where breaking par is a regular consideration. If they go out and play well, they can break par. That's when you start taking in the subtleties of certain types of grass conditions, whether you're hitting a chip into the grain, whether you're hitting a chip down grain, how the certain putts are going to read, the subtleties and all that. Because up until that point, most players aren't even good enough to control the angle of impact or the squareness of the face on a putt consistently enough to produce enough results to sort of give you the feedback that's necessary to make those adjustments to improve. So until you're able to break par regularly, grain, length of, you know, the type of sand, all of that stuff, it doesn't really matter because you're not good enough to even, you know, make an adjustment.
Nota, we had a representative from the USGA on late last week, and he was talking to us a little bit. We were reliving what went on in 2008, one of the great tournaments, certainly, that we've seen. Certainly, the dramatics of what went down there on that final 72nd hole with Tiger Woods, et cetera. And we saw the plaque yesterday there on the 18th, and we were sort of led to believe that Tiger, in some capacity, either watching and replaying some of the 2008 tournament or what have you, was going to be a part of the broadcast. I don't know what you can or can't say here, but because the last U.S. Open that was hosted here was won in such dramatic fashion, what are you expecting just in terms of any sort of conversation about Tiger Woods over the next 4 days, a guy you know pretty well?
Yeah, I expect him to be a regular part of the conversation because, you know, it's just referencing history and his role that he played in history and just kind of how he went about it. I mean, it was one of the most exciting finishes that you will ever see in a golf tournament. And if you want a good example of just how hard Poana greens are to putt, watch that last putt that he hit. Sometimes you'll see that there's various replays going around the world, but sometimes you'll see a close up of the ball rolling on against the green and you'll actually see it pop into the air 6 or 7 times as it makes its way to the hole. You know, what Tiger mentioned to me when he was walking up to that putt and he looked at it, he's like, oh my God, how am I going to make this? This green is so bumpy right now. And so his mindset heading into that putt was, look, I just have to put the purest roll that I possibly can and control the things that I can control, which is a good stroke and good speed, and then leave the rest up to fate. And in Tiger Woods' case, you know, it seemed like fate was always in his favor. Because that thing went in, and the rest is history.
All right. Well, he likes Rory McIlroy at the 121st U.S. Open, which tees off coming up tomorrow morning at 6:45 a.m. He's Nota Begay III with the Golf Channel, and today presented by Bet Online, where you can find all sorts of great odds and prop bets. Nota, always our pleasure. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
That's Nota Begay III from the Golf Channel stopping by here. And, you know, some of the longer shots on the board, I'm reading a story about Phil Mickelson. More bets have been placed on Phil Mickelson to win this week at Torrey Pines than have been placed on any other golfer at multiple U.S. sportsbooks. Caesars, Mickelson has attracted nearly twice as many bets as any other golfer. And by the time he tees off on Thursday, they're expecting to have 7-figure liability on the 50-to-1 long shot. He is a 50-to-1 long shot, Phil Mickelson, for as much as he's part of the conversation here this week, 50-to-1. So I don't think that those casinos often get built because people are not winning bets, but that's a lot of action. Bettors are loving this story. They're loving Lefty. They're loving that he's a long shot. They're loving that he's coming off a victory at the PGA Championship. So why not put a couple of bucks on Lefty to complete the career Grand Slam at Torrey Pines? I don't love the bet. I love the story. I do love the story. It's an amazing story if it happens, even though there's not a lot of personal connection to Mickelson. But those odds have gone from 70 to 1 now to 50 to 1. And to read the story at ESPN.com, he is the biggest, the most popular figure to bet right now in the U.S. Open is Phil. And if he were to win, this would be one of those times where a lot of people are going to take money from the books. Seven figures wagered on Phil at 50 to 1. That's a lot of money. I can't do that math, but somebody else
probably. Do you think Phil would wager on Phil?
Would Phil wager? That's an excellent question because these guys, you know, and note it says it's you know, it's sort of like sticky stuff in baseball. Like everybody understands that this is the sort of thing that's happening, but if it's not discussed, it's not discussed until it is. But when these guys would go over and they could wager legally in Britain, you know, either England, Scotland, wherever it was that they were playing the Open Championship, it was very common for golfers who were competing in the Open Championship to go and wager on like Tiger Woods. So whether they would wager on themselves, yeah, I think some guys have. I think that there's a little bit of history with that, that golfers in the past have put a couple of bucks on themselves. I mean, it would never be enough that it would alter or somehow impact the quality of play or, you know, the desire to win a tournament. Like you would never bet on somebody else and then be like, well, wait a second. Now I got a way to, I could win this tournament, but I'm not going to do it because I wagered on Tiger Woods. I don't think he would ever do something like that. But would Phil bet on Phil this week? Yeah, I think Phil probably would bet on Phil this week. Probably. It sounds like a kind of thing that Phil Mickelson would do. I wouldn't, I don't know that I would bet on Phil this week, but I could see Phil doing that.
If you had like FU money, mm-hmm. I think, and I was like that good at golf, I might do it.
Phil digs Phil.
Yeah.
Let's not kid ourselves
here.
Oh,
yeah.
Phil probably was really digging himself at 70 to 1, too. You know, that's the kind of thing where Phil probably saw that, and that probably impacted him in some capacity, where Phil is like, I'm 70 to 1 to win this tournament? Like, what's that all about? I'm a Hall of Fame golfer. I'm the best golfer that's going to be on that course coming up on Thursday. But that said, I don't think anybody will be completely surprised if Phil's not even there on Saturday.
Does he make the cut?
Yeah.
So that was it.
You could bet on that too. Like, what's the cut line going
to
be?
Was that Damon Hack or was that Steve Sands that he is more likely to miss the cut than be in contention?
Yeah,
on Sunday.
I think that that's conventional wisdom for Phil. But you know, you also would say that it was more likely that he would miss the cut than he would win the PGA Championship as well. I think everybody would agree with that. And what happened? He went out there and he won the PGA Championship. All right, a couple of home runs here. One from Fernando Tatis Jr., one from Trent Grisham. We are tied 3-3. They're in the bottom of the third inning
in Denver, Colorado. 4:30 end time all over it.
Yes, super exciting. Super exciting day here. My eyes are getting a little bit blurry watching this day after day. But we'll see. Maybe this is the turning point that this team needs because as we all learned, getting on a flight following a victory, that's a happy flight.
How many turning points do you get in a season?
In a 162-game season?
Yes. How many turning points shall we allow?
How many have they had so far?
Four.
You had four? Okay.
How many have they had so far this year?
Well, they just had one Sunday.
Okay. I think the previous turning point would have been the 9-0 homestand. No?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dodger series was possibly a turning point because of how they performed there.
Sunday Night Baseball.
That was part of the Dodger series, though. So that's one in its entirety. The 9-0 homestand would be two.
So they had three.
They've had three.
Next one's the last one they have.
One more turning point.
And we're at game 70.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we're just about there now, aren't we?
Uh-huh.
Just about there. All right. Mark Medina will join us coming up here in a little bit. Coming up also, we do want to hear the sound from Tyler Glass now.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to Jim and John talk about this yesterday, and it was a good conversation about how are you supposed to feel about Tyler Glass now, who admits that he's doing something that's in the gray area of where the rule book used to allow but isn't going to allow moving forward. And now the guy is injured. And is he injured because he was cheating or is he injured because he was doing something that was kind of in the gray area of the sport?
Because he went cold turkey and it affected his grip and his UCL.
In the season, and he's clearly frustrated now because who knows if he's actually going to be able to come back, and he's off to an outstanding start.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tampa Bay Rays are a really, really good team. So, you know, I thought that was an interesting conversation that you guys were having yesterday when you were saying, Jim, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about Tyler Glass now, because on one hand, you feel for anybody who's dealing with any sort of injury. On the other hand, I don't know that cheating is the right word. I don't know that sunscreen specifically was a banned substance, but you're doing something that is no longer allowed in baseball. So how bad am I supposed to feel for you?
Yeah, the more we talked about it, the more like bad I felt for him.
Yeah.
Even though you guess you could describe it as cheating, but if you're using rosin, which every pitcher can use, mm-hmm. and you're mixing it with a little bit of sunscreen to get a better grip, I don't know. It was weird because I felt bad. Then I was like, oh, he's a cheater.
I just don't think of it. I don't know why you guys we're using the word cheater, but I just don't think of it as cheating. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just don't. And I'll tell you this, and it might get lost in translation, but Yu Darvish had a very interesting postgame yesterday as well, okay? And I posted it somewhere on my timeline. You can find it. And I think it was Dennis Lynn that asked him that question, like, was your grip affected at all in last night's start? And he said, no, nothing has changed with me. And then he also talked about how the baseballs here are much different than they are in Japan. And that everybody has always known, including Major League Baseball, that these baseballs are slick. His issue was, they've always known this. Why are you making this change right now during the middle of the season? Which is something that Tyler Glasnow said, Jim's best friend, Trevor Bauer, alluded to, other pitchers. The criticism is, this has always been here. This is nothing new. Why? You're overreacting to offense being down. You've decided to go ahead and do this. And what Darvish says, what they should do right now is just change the baseball. Just go ahead and change the baseball. If that's because you have to, you've got to have a grip. It's slick. You have to do something. His problem is the timing. Like, why are you doing this right now?
It was pointed out that you know, his spin rate was well down last night. Now, again, granted, this is Colorado. Ask Trevor Hoffman how the changeup, how much different the changeup was in Denver, Colorado.
And he hasn't always fared well in Colorado.
Ask Greg Maddux about how the grip changed in Denver. Go look up Greg Maddux's number. Greg Maddux, greatest right-hand pitcher I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. By the way, a guy also at times people would whisper about some of the things that he might be doing to the baseball, but that's neither here nor there. That becomes part of the lore. That becomes part of the lore of the sport that we like Gaylord Perry. But I'm with you. I mean, doing this sort of stuff, like as Tyler Glasnow was explaining it, I thought it made a lot of sense.
I did too.
When he's like, now I've got to grip this harder, which means that I'm using muscles in my forearm that I wasn't previously using, and now all of a sudden I'm squeezing, and this is now an unintended consequence of everything that it is that we're dealing with in this situation. And I mean, to do this sort of stuff, I mean, I realize that wearing batting gloves is not the same as putting sticky stuff on a baseball, but if you just told everybody you can't wear batting gloves any longer, bless you. What's with you guys today? Everybody's sneezing. But if you just told these guys that you couldn't do that, like, you know, then that would change the biomechanics of the actual sport itself. Even if, you know, we just got done talking to Nota Begay III. And none of you realize, you know, that there's like Kukui grass and, you know, there's Poiana. And like none of them, nobody realizes that. And it sounds like a bunch of whiny gibberish coming from a golfer. But those are the tools of the trade, right? Like, we're talking a lot about Tony Gwynn today. Go ask Tony Gwynn about a baseball bat. Like Tony Gwynn could tell you if a baseball bat was a quarter of an ounce off. Because he was Mr. Padre. And the same thing goes for all these guys. And you know, all of a sudden, if you told Tony Gwynn that, you know, you had to use a bat that was such and such a, and this is all he had been using, that would be a completely, it doesn't sound like much, I know, for the average hacker, the average, you know, softball dude out there, or somebody like me. But for these guys that are so specific about their sport, it really is. The slightest little thing does make a big difference. Tyler Glasnow, you'll hear what he had to say when we... Got some text coming up in our next segment, 70470, first word of the text, XTRA, coming up top of the hour. Good booking by Marty Caswell. She had Mark Medina booked ahead, not even realizing that we'd wake up today, we'd have a handful of injuries to report, we'd have a couple of coaches being fired, including Stan Van Gundy, fired by the New Orleans Pelicans. I don't know how many more opportunities Stan Van Gundy's going to get, but somebody's got to be able to coach Zion Williamson, right? Somebody out there has got to be able to coach Zion.
Ran that team into the ground this year.
Before Zion just decides he's going to pack his bags and leave for the Big Apple.
Before he goes and bees a Nick.
His words, not mine.
His favorite place to play.
His words, not mine. Not Jim's. Our iHeartRadio Music Festival is back. You can win your tickets before you can buy them. This is how you know, like, we're back. You can see live performances by Cheap Trick, Dua Lipa, Florida Georgia Line, Maroon 5, Nelly, and more, September 17th and 18th at T-Mobile Arena in Vegas. Two nights, one stage, you can listen to win tickets, airfare, hotel accommodations in Vegas. Your next chance to text in and win happens sometime this hour, and exclusively, Capital One cardholder presale starts next Wednesday. The iHeartRadio Music Festival is back. You do not want to miss it.
Looking okay,
forward
Marty?
To going to iHeartRadio Music Festivals. What are you, yeah, what is going on over here?
No, I'm just trying to read like something from Scott Boras put a statement out on sticky stuff, controversy, whatever that we were just talking about, but I cannot read it. It's tiny.
What's tiny?
The font.
It looks like something breaking happened.
I can't read it. I'm like, where is this?
I was like, did someone just like,
no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm squinting at my screen. I'm like, what is this? Like,
where
look at
is
this.
It?
Right here.
Right where?
Right here. I'm pointing my, how can anyone, you can't read that.
Sorry, man. You think I'm going to read all that?
No, I can't. No.
I'll let some other reporter read that and just tell me what I need
okay,
to know.
Okay, here's the thing. I just decided I just don't care enough to try and magnify it.
I don't care either. You know, this whole idea like, oh, it's cheating. Is it cheating? Is it not? Cheating, you know, cheating is when you go out to the mound and you hit the pitcher over the head with a chair. Like, this isn't cheating. Put a little sunscreen on your fingers. What are we even talking about
here? I don't know.
Here's Tyler Glass now, who's going to miss a significant amount of time. And I don't know that public opinion will agree with Tyler Glass now or not. I know, you know, when people make a lot of money to play sports, generally, they're not perceived as sympathetic figures in life. I've just learned that. Generally speaking, I'm not saying that applies to all of you. That just is a statement speaking in generalities. But he's going to miss some time, and he talked about the impact of not using whatever it was that he was using, sunscreen and rosin. He does believe that this led to him now having to miss time and getting injured.
So I'm going from like a flexed muscle to letting a ball go. And like I said, I was like, maybe it's not going to, I don't think it'll lead to any injuries. But waking up after that start, I was like, okay, this sucks. Something is weird here. And then that same feeling is persisting all week long. Then I go into my start yesterday and that same feeling just, it pops or whatever the hell happened to my elbow. Like I feel it, something happens. And I'm sitting out there just like, you got to be kidding me. The whole day yesterday, I'm sitting there trying to get a grip on a ball. And I'm not trying to blame anyone. I'm not trying to say like, oh, this is all MLB's fault. Like they got thrown into the situation too. They're doing the best they possibly can to navigate around this. They're trying to make this fair for people. I understand that, but you can't, whether you want us to not use sticky stuff or not is fine. Fine. Do it in the off season. Give us a chance to adjust to it. But I just threw 80 something, 70, whatever innings. And then you just told me I can't use anything in the middle of the year. I had to change everything I've been doing the entire season, everything out of the window. I have to start doing something completely new. And then I'm telling you, I truly believe that's why I got hurt. Me throwing 100 and being 6'7" is why I got hurt, but that contributed. And so I'm just frustrated that like they don't understand how hard it is to pitch one, but to tell us to do something completely different in the middle of a season is insane. I just don't, it's ridiculous. There has to be some give and take here. You can't just take away everything and not add something. Pitchers need to be able to have some sort of control or some sort of grip on the ball. And I just don't want things like this to happen to somebody else. I don't want a fastball to sail away and hit somebody in the face like it already has. So I just think like, I understand you need to take an aggressive approach here, but like, I just think people are going about it all wrong. And I'm sitting here, my lifelong dream, I want to go out and win a Cy Young. I want to be an all-star. And then now it's all shit because now it's over. And now I have to try and rehab to come back in the playoffs. So I'm clearly frustrated. It's just, I think there needs to be a lot more. People need to figure this out. You can't just tell us to use nothing. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that it might be really easy just to dismiss this and say, this is a whiner who doesn't get to cheat anymore, and too bad. But I do think there is something there. You know, if this sort of stuff had never really, you know, if rosin wasn't enough and you wanted to put a little bit of sunscreen for whatever it is, I've always heard this about the baseballs, and clearly I'm not some sort of expert here. You'd have to defer to people who actually throw baseballs for a living. This can't come from the commissioner's office. They can't come from the Rawlings factory. This has to come from the people who actually throw the baseballs. And the one thing that you constantly hear is the seams were lower than they ever were. The baseballs were kind of slick. And you do want, and you can imagine that if you don't have the sunscreen or whatever this tacky surface is that you want to use to get a little bit of a better grip, whether it's to spin it at a higher rate or otherwise, or just to be able to grip it. Like, you can understand that somebody then would have to grip that baseball harder than they would have before they were told that they shouldn't be using the sunscreen. So I get it. I get it. But like I said, I don't suspect that Tyler Glasnow or anybody else is going to be a sympathetic figure here in the eyes of most people who pay attention to this. If people are still awake and still care enough to continue this conversation, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they are. But I don't know that I also think that, well, you're just complaining because you can't cheat anymore. You know, there's something there that like, you know, this does feel like it should be something that when you're constantly monkeying around with these baseballs and you hear the same thing said, gosh, these things are slick and gosh, these seams have never been lower. When you hear this sort of stuff over and over again, you sort of go, well, and you never enforce this sort of thing. Now, like putting spider glue or whatever that, what is it called? Spider tech? Okay, I feel like maybe this has gone a little bit too far, but why has it gone too far? It's gone too far because you've never addressed this before. Now, all of a sudden, you're asking everybody to come to a complete halt here after people have cashed in for hundreds of millions of dollars, and now you have pitchers out there who are uncomfortable, and that's going to put them at risk. It potentially could put hitters at risk, and like, who wants any of that? Like, who really thought that this was that big of a deal? I don't know. But I understand what he's saying.
I guess a question I'd ask Rob Manfred among a million questions, and not him, just whoever else is in charge of this, Theo, other people, why right now? Why during the season? Why do you not address this later? And it goes to what you, Darvish, thought. Like, offense is down, and they felt the need to go ahead and do this right now to react to offense being down. Like, you know, why do you do it now? You can make these changes in the offseason.
Yeah.
But right during the season, when guys are already, it's already underway.
I mean, are they making changes? Or are they just enforcing stuff that they never really enforced before? I mean, is that what they're doing? Are they just enforcing things that they had never enforced? Does it say in the rule book that you can't use sunscreen? I mean, sunscreen?
What are you going to do when you play a game? It's like 110 degrees in Chicago, and they're telling you you can't wear sunscreen on your body?
Well, I think they've now said that they've banned it at night or indoors.
Oh.
So just at night and indoors, okay. You can't use sunscreen. Because if they ban sunscreen, then all of a sudden the players are going to be like, dude, you want us to get melanoma?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't sound like a good alternative either. But it's just, you know, it all feels very unnecessary to me. You know, and I feel for this guy because I think he makes a point. I do think he makes a point. And I'm not saying that I 100% agree with his point. This always doesn't have to be binary either. Where, you know, you either do or don't, and that's it, and it's either this or that, because that's what our sports media model has created, that it's either all this or it's all that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I do think that he makes a point. I really do. You know, like I said earlier, if you just told Tony Gwynn all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you know, hey, that bat now is not in code, you know, or you're using too much pine tar on it or whatever and then all of a sudden the physiology of what you were doing as an artist, you know, as somebody who's an artist, who's brilliant at his craft, changed ever so slightly, it would be a lot more dramatic for them than some of us might realize. I don't know, Marty. I feel like this is just a sticky situation.
Hey-o.
When we come back, text messages.
It's again. Baseball has like the dumbest controversy.
The dumbest.
It really is.
But now it's costing this guy.
No, but we're happy it's not something. As you mentioned, I think it was Monday, or I don't know, maybe it was last week. I mean, you're glad it's not like a bad scandal. There are worse scandals that sports can have. It's just really, I'm trying to be, you have to ask the pitchers. You have to ask Yu Darvish yesterday in postgame. You have to ask, I'm sure, Blake Snell, because that's his former teammate that ranted yesterday. You've got to ask these guys, but it's like,
I remember when golf...
I don't feel so indignant, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, golf did a bunch of stuff where they, you know, the equipment was, you know, being called into question. But I don't ever remember them doing that in the middle of the tour season. They were like, let's address this in the offseason. Let's not go messing with Adam Scott and his belly putter.
Yeah, it'd be equivalent of the PGA coming out with some rule this Friday.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Right in the middle?
Tomorrow, Xander, you can't use that driver anymore.
Like, what are you...
I'm like, I always... It's my driver. Text when we come back. It's
a ceramic Wi-Fi from Cox. Let the questions fly.
Is that a serious question?
Time to...
Next question.
Ask Darren.
Such a lame question.
Text us at 704-70.
619 number text in. Glass now needs to shut up. Any foreign substance has always been illegal. It's not something new in the rule book. As for hitters, have you ever seen the video of Billy Martin having George Brett's bat checked and George Brett going berserk? Yeah, I also remember that they came back and they played that later. And wasn't George Brett cleared in that situation?
I think so, yes.
You know who the starting pitcher was in that game for the Kansas City Royals?
Buddy Black.
That is correct. Buddy, if you ever get a hold of Buddy since he lives here locally, ask him to tell you the story about what happened when the Royals went back to New York and they had to play the rest of that game. It's an amazing story. Wherever the Royals were coming from and going to, the plane stopped in New York. Half the team got on a bus. The rest of the team stayed on the bus and just continued doing whatever it was doing. It's an amazing story that only Buddy Black can tell. I can't do it any justice. I don't think he should shut up, though. I disagree with that. I don't think he should shut up at all.
I think it's just beginning. Because remember, they're not going to start enforcing this until Monday. This is just the beginning.
Now, you know who should shut up is Trevor Bauer. That guy should shut up.
Did you hear, we might play it later on, but he talked about what he thinks they should do. They have like a ball machine in the dugouts, and all the balls should go through the ball machine and lather them up for the pitchers, and they should do it every half inning. And
with the lap, never mind. I'm not
yeah.
Gonna say it.
Don't. Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Lather. He wants the balls lathered.
Yes. As does Pedro Martinez. He never wanted anybody to touch his balls.
Right. Yeah.
Well, this is now like a whole Deflategate thing, where different guys like different PSI and different footballs. Different guys like different tackiness on the baseball. I mean, again, I do think that there are lines that you can cross. I'm failing to understand exactly where the sunscreen line lies. I mean, I am.
That one doesn't make sense to me.
619 number early on in the show says, I'm expecting Blake Snell to get crushed today. Right. And another excuse as to why he didn't perform. I don't know that I'd say he's getting crushed, but he has allowed 4 runs in 4 innings. Mm-hmm. And when they presented him with a lead, he promptly gave it back. I don't like that. You want to tell me you can't get a grip on a baseball in Denver? I can buy that. But when they finally fought back into the game, he gave up the lead immediately. Padres have retaken the lead 5-4. It's the top of the fourth inning, though. I would make my best bet of the day. This game will not finish 5-4.
No chance.
Is that your official best bet?
That is my best bet of the day. 714 number. This Padre team is the result of once again, quote, winning the offseason. And this year, literally betting the farm for a 26-man roster. As much as it's on the players for not performing, it's heavily on A.J. Preller for betting on this offense to replicate a 60-game season's production. Interesting thought. 619 number says, so Jace Tingler said the Penn needed left-hand pitching help, so they send the lefty down and they bring up a right-hand pitcher.
Right.
Makes sense. Checks out. 619 number. So, Darren, are you going to touch on this Cristiano Ronaldo Coca-Cola story, or do you just not give a toot? It almost didn't pass the sniff test for me, thinking that something outside the lines would have been a $4 billion hit. Must really blow if you're a shareholder. If you're not, it might be time to get it now since this passes the...
What?
Is this like a real text?
There's a lot of code in there. I mean, he removed the Coca-Cola bottles from the press conference, right? And they are a massive sponsor, and their stock dropped like $1 billion.
$4 billion. Yes.
No way.
He did that, and then somebody else removed like Heineken. It's like, what? No one said he had to chug it on the podium. What are you doing? It's a sponsor.
The drink power water. Of soccer.
It's just come on.
It's the global power of the sport. There's nothing like it. I know. You know. We don't always talk about its global reach, but this is the impact of it, that you can impact a stock like that is just, it's stunning. But I think the point of this text from the 619 number is the words that he put in quotes, since this is a story about Coca-Cola,
right?
Coke,
right?
If you will. Here are the words that are in quotes. Toot, lines, hit, blow, and bump. If you know, you know.
I feel like it's all code.
619 number, I told you Snell was going to get crushed. 619 number, the wrong lefty got sent down.
Oh,
another 619 number, even the load management NBA stars are getting injured and receiving guaranteed money. That's the other thing. Some of these dudes have a track record here of getting injured. 619, I heard that Schaefer 1360 promo, do you have Phil or Xander? How about Charlie Hoffman? How about Charlie Hoffman? Be rooting for Charlie, too. 619 number, Darren, we need to know the rest of the story when you told your athlete about meeting his friend. I don't think I ever told the athletes that I...
You didn't?
I did not. It would just lead to questions. And I didn't want to say, hey, dude, because like you slept with this woman, I just decided to call it a day. It just wasn't a good conversation starter for me. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
That's all I'm saying. 619 number, has the home team ever been booed on reopening day 2.0?
On reopening day, no. But on probably opening day, yes.
Yeah, I mean.
Of course.
Ray Kroc. Never seen such stupid ball playing in my whole life. Wasn't that opening day?
I don't know if it was opening day.
619, my best bet is that I'm headed to Caliente to bet on myself, signed Phil Mickelson. 619, my turning point for Will Myers was him getting a hit off DeGrom. Unfortunately, that was a U-turn, not a turning point. 760 number, how are Padre hitters going to get much out of their... How are they going to get out of their funk if they're in and out of the lineup and batting in a different order so much? Tingler should try running the same out there in the same batting order...
Changes every single day.
...for two straight weeks. We've seen more than enough Profar for a while.
Like every single day it changes.
So I was just complaining about Snell because, you know, he's down 3-0. Mm-hmm. The team fights back. And they get to 3-3. And immediately he gives up a run. And then it was 4-3 Rockies. Well, guess what? The Padres fought back. They gave Snell a 5-4 lead. Snell goes back out to the mound. Is it still Snell?
It's still Snell.
And he just gave off a lead up home run in the fourth. So they've given him, they've fought back to at least tie the game and then give him a lead. And both times, immediately in the blink of an eye, he's given it right back. God, that is infuriating. 619 number, I'm so glad I don't have to watch this clown pitch on Thursday. I'd rather watch Austin Hedges hit than watch Blake Snell pitch.
Oof. Reopening day will be Musgrove, right?
It will be.
It's good.
By the way, if you were sitting around watching Austin Hedges hit, you were probably doing it wrong. We were there to watch Austin Hedges catch.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to keep that point up, though. 442 number, the Padres make every opposing pitcher look like Koufax. Pathetic. Where are the Magic Padres from 2020? It's basically the same team. Yeah, that's what we talked about yesterday. Magic is that Manny Machado is not the same player. I do believe he's injured. 760 number, your best bet came through, D. Smith. It's now 5-5.
Is this the same texture?
Yeah, it didn't take long. It really wasn't climbing out on a limb, was it?
No. Not today in Colorado.
Not a human being on the planet would have bet that score was going to remain 5-4. When we come back, a lot of NBA news. Mark Medina, USA Today's